Good morning and welcome to the Sports Polygamy Podcast. It's the 22nd of November 2012. I'm Eric George. I'm joined today by our AFL man, Sam McInerney, to help break down the ins and outs of the AFL draft because, of course, it is the big day in November. How are you, Sam?
Yeah, I'm very well. The draft should be interesting, I think. We've heard probably more about it this year than we have maybe any other year I can remember. But so it should be interesting.
It has been pretty heavily hyped. I'm curious as to whether that's, you know, a media thing and, you know, perhaps the AFL's ongoing pursuit of trying to take a more American model where the drafts are a huge event. I mean, why do you think that the draft just received so much attention this year?
I think certainly we've sort of discussed at some point there's been a tendency from the AFL to try to have footy in the news, you know, all year round, and I think that's probably got a little bit to do with it. As for this year's draft specifically, you know, a lot of people were calling it a super draft, probably earlier in the year rather than, you know, in the last month or two. And from kind of what I'm led to believe, that's probably not the case, although it's got some good talent.
So the last true super draft was when, according to AFL heads?
Well, I guess the only one that people talk about is the 01 draft. That's kind of known as the super draft. And then every year after that, we hear about there might be another super draft next year or something, but...
So the people have been trying to predict plenty of instances of a super draft since?
I suppose so, yeah. I think there was the year where Bryce Gibbs went number one was meant to be a very good draft. But, I mean, nobody sort of refers to it as a super draft nowadays.
Yeah, and do you remember if people were really hyping that 01 draft before it happened, or has it been kind of retroactively that it's been so highly esteemed?
I think people talked about the draft a lot less in those days. Mm-hmm. So there probably wasn't, you know, the quantity of hype, I guess. But certainly people knew it was, I think recruiters knew it was a pretty special draft. You got to remember though that, Fremantle had pick one in that draft and they chose to trade it to Hawthorn, in exchange for Trent Crode, who eventually went back to the Hawks. So, I guess, Freo, probably...
didn't value it that highly.
Yeah, perhaps not, or, you know... Trent Crode was looking like he, you know, could be the next big thing to some degree at that point, but I don't think you'd see any club, you know, giving away pick one, even for one of the best, you know, up-and-coming players, you know, these days.
So you've already shown your hand a little bit in what you think of this draft this year. As a more general question, do you think it's a bit silly to get so excited about a draft before it's even happened? Do you think it's possible to get that hyped about the talent at this point?
I think people forget that, you know, it takes a while for these kids to come on because, you know, they are just kids. And if you look back at last year's draft, with the exception of GWS, who were forced to you know, play a team full of kids, basically. You know, how many clubs had a first-year player really make an impact? You know, and you go back the year before and similar kind of thing. Andrew Gaff's probably the one from the year before who's, you know, really turned it on probably more than anyone else. But I think with early players, with players early in their careers, you know, you look at them and you go, this kid's going to be good rather than, you know, this kid is going to drag us up the ladder this year because, you know, that's not really how it works. But I think that's what, you know, clubs want to focus on to sell memberships and, you know, get people excited. And, you know, I think that's something that's been talked about with, say, Jack Viney, you know, who people are saying, oh, he'll, you know, he'll be the captain one day. And I don't know, he sounds like a good kid from what we hear, but just seems like a long way off.
Yeah, I guess the reality is all these kids are literally the embodiment of hope for these teams. They're the, you know, they're so exciting because they're an unknown concept. You know, people don't really know what they're going to get from them. So there's the potential that they are going to carry their club to success at some point. But before we get into, you know, any more generalities about the draft, why don't we quickly address this 2012 one? Are there any curiosities or interesting players you'd like to mention and you find interesting?
I think Dale Garlett's a really interesting one. Someone who's meant to have a whole lot of talent, but is just really has a whole lot of off-field issues by the sounds of things. And people were talking about him as being a first-round kind of pick, you know, some time back. And now it's possible that he might not even get drafted. I spoke to Kinnear Beetson, who's Sydney's head recruiter, a few weeks back. And he didn't talk about him specifically, but he said this year's draft has, you know, some top-end talent that should really, on talent alone, be picked up really early. But, you know, he won't be picking him, you know, with early picks. And seems like a lot of clubs are kind of thinking similar things. Other than that, I think Menzel's an interesting story, who just sounds like an absolute freak, and you know, he's kind of a high half forward who can kick bags of 8 goals and 9 goals and stuff, but he's had you know, LAR surgery on his knee, which
at this point already, that's scary.
Yeah, which I think when he was 16, so which has kind of got people a bit scared, but you know, on talent he should be probably top 3 from what we're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the types of players available, Kinnear Beetson was saying it's pretty good for midfielders and utilities, but there's not much in terms of ruckman or key position players, and it's not a great draft for that, which kind of explains to some degree why we saw probably, you know, teams scrambling to get you know, bigger players on their list in the draft. You know, I think about St Kilda that were throwing everything at trying to get Mitch Brown.
In the trade period, you mean?
In the trade period, sorry. And Hickey, who they got, who's sort of an unproven ruckman, but, you know, they gave up a fair bit for him from memory. So, okay. Yeah, I think it's, you know, A lot of teams will be happy to get if they get a good midfielder, but for those teams that really have holes, I think this probably isn't a great draft for them.
Well, that's probably not what the AFL wants to hear, because there are obviously some, you know, expansion sides that will be looking to get good quality out of this draft. But anyway, I am a little bit confused by the whole concept of the AFL drafts. The two of them, or three now, I guess, if you count the mini draft. Why are there more than one?
Well, I think the rookie drafts, I mean, we know the national draft, that's what's on today. Mm-hmm. And, basically, you know, this year's crop of, year 12 finishing kind of kids who are thought to be ready, to go into the system. And then the rookie draft tends to be people who are a bit older or people who, you know, aren't quite ready for AFL yet, but need time to develop. We've seen, you know, heaps of great success stories off the rookie list in recent years. Matthew Boyd, Cox, you know,
lots of players. So is the rookie draft people who are playing in VFL and, you know, amateur leagues around Australia?
Yeah, that, and also just, you know, if there are kids who, probably Majak Dawe's a good example from North Melbourne. So he's, you know, Sudanese guy, a lot of talent, but pretty raw and, you know, got a long way to go. But getting that spot on the list means you can get that experience without having to, you know, take up a primary spot with, you know, your team expecting that you might make an impact that year.
So there's a whole separate roster of guys that get drafted onto a rookie team?
Roster?
Like, there's like a whole bunch, like, do they go into a separate squad to your team? Is that what you're suggesting, if they're not taking up a team spot?
Yes. Well, they can be, I mean, if you have an injury in the middle of the year, they can go onto the primary list.
Okay, so there's a whole separate squad. I didn't even know that.
It's about, I think, 5 or 6 players.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so Kurt Tippett goes in today's draft. Potentially, like players who are delisted and want to nominate for the draft, they go in the same draft as these young kids.
You're not going to like this. There's another draft, which is the preseason draft. So players who have left, an AFL club can nominate for this draft. I don't think Kurt Tippett has, because
he's not allowed to, or whatever.
We would hear about that that's all true. Day, every day.
It'd be a special edition of the newspaper.
Yes. So I think the preseason draft will be where he goes, which is a weird kind of thing and something that you don't hear a lot about.
So how many, like, do teams pick a guy in the preseason draft? A couple of guys? I mean, I'm assuming it's not like this, national draft, which has got a bunch of rounds.
It's generally probably five or six players are picked.
What's the point in having a draft for five or six players?
You get Kurt Tippett.
Oh my god! See what?
It's strange.
So yeah, my suggestion too, and here's where
it may be more than that, but I can remember.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm thinking of the year when Essendon got rid of Bashahuli, and he went into that draft, and I think there were only about six guys picked. There was Hooley, Hardingham from Essendon, and Barlow was the other one from Freo. So, bit of quality in there. But yeah, it's quite strange.
So this, this is the point where we switch into Eric fixes the AFL mode. Why not have all of these three? I mean, I can kind of understand the point of this rookie draft if you've got a whole separate part of your team that they're not actually. I mean, do those rookies train with this team? Are they part of the training squad or not?
Yeah, absolutely.
They just don't get called up unless there's an empty roster spot that needs to be filled there, essentially on call.
That's pretty much how it goes. They're basically there to develop and, hopefully eventually work their way onto the senior list if all goes well. But it means that you can take a risk on someone who might be absolutely nothing, might give you no value. So, yeah.
So why do we need three drafts, though? That's the obvious question. Why can't we just have one? And if you want to spend your 10th round pick on some Hail Mary, then good luck to you. But why does this whole... It seems extravagant.
Do you not like the idea of the rookie list?
Well, I think it's fine, but I don't understand why you couldn't just tack three more rounds onto today's draft and have drafted rookies today.
Okay, well, why couldn't you? Can you?
No, I can't tell you why not. I think it's crazy. Like, it seems to be logical to just get it all out of the way at one go. Your drafting's done, all your cast offs. I mean, does this preseason draft, does that need to happen at that point because players get cut over the summer?
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, there are players who have been at AFL clubs who are training with other clubs now. And they want to see how that goes. And then if that all goes well, then they'll get a rookie position. And I guess this draft, which is, the national draft, which is mainly for kind of the young kids, they probably need a bit more time in the system, and they want to kind of get them in early and teach them everything they need to know about the AFL system, which I guess guys who have previously been at AFL clubs, they don't need that. They just need to, clubs need to decide whether they're worth the risk or not.
Yep.
As for the preseason draft, that's an odd one.
I wonder if that'll just become
sort of draft, but it's not a, not a big deal.
I wonder if that'll become obsolete once free agency really starts kicking. I mean, why couldn't you make them free agents and teams can sign them if they want them.
Especially with the delisted free agency period, which we haven't heard much about, but it was there this year, just no one chose to use it.
Yeah. Yeah, so we could see it kind of getting phased out, you think?
Possibly, but I think the fact that it happens, a fair bit later gives... I think it's good for clubs in that they can kind of see what they're getting. I think that's the appeal. So,
okay.
Why break why fix what ain't broken?
Because I think it is broken. I think it's ridiculous. I think having four drafts now with your mini draft is nuts.
The mini draft's not a draft.
It's two players.
It's two players, and they're...
Well, fine. So you got a draft with two players. You got a draft with six players.
Is that just a little hard to, comprehend?
I think it's really strange.
But there are obviously reasons.
Yeah.
What would be the reasons to change it other than that would be simplify a bit convenient for you? And, yeah. You could read it all in one person. Day on the paper.
Yeah. I think part of it, especially if the AFL is intent on doing this, making events out of stuff like the draft, the bigger you can make it, then all the better. But, I wonder what the point... I mean, it just seems like, especially that preseason draft from what you described to me is a bit of a relic from before. I mean, before they had free agency and stuff. I mean, I don't understand, if you've got this free agency period, why not just extend that through the first 5 weeks of the season? So if a team's got a need, they can pick up some veteran guy who's not listed currently and stick him on their roster.
Well, I guess it caters for... It works in the same way that the national draft works, in that the team who finishes last gets the first pick. So,
yeah.
From that perspective, you could say free agency caters to, the rich clubs and whatever, rather than the clubs down the bottom struggling who need it,
Yeah.
So there's that argument.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you want to talk about parity, that's a good point to cover, because one thing I do think is curious, and it's obviously the only example I can think of it in the world when it comes to drafting, is the father-son rule. And it seems to me to be the strongest force in the AFL against parity. Like, I understand that people are very concerned right now at the start of free agency in the AFL, and they think it's going to really reduce, the chances for bad clubs to get good. But I frankly haven't seen that happen in other leagues that have both free agency and a draft. Like, it seems like if you can draft well, you can still get a decent team together. But if you've got a rule that says you can get Gary Ablett in the middle of the draft when he could be going to the worst team in the league, that would seem to me to be undermining parity a lot more.
And probably, Matthew Scarlett and Tom Hawkins as well.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a fair chunk of a premiership side.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. I like it. I like the tradition.
As an Essendon fan, you do enjoy it?
Oh, well, it's handy this year. But, I mean, we had Darcy Danaher as well, and that didn't work out after... I mean, he showed so much at Auskick. I played Auskick with him.
He
was a freak. He was just insane at the age of about 9. But, Joe Danaher's exciting, but I think it's a good thing to see. It's kind of one of those things which seems to be kind of left over from... It's sort of stuck between this corporate kind of American style of, drafting or whatever, and the kind of romantic,
Frankly, the VFL small town era, let's be honest, like...
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Like, it's because it does mainly cater towards the Victorian clubs.
Well, at the moment, simply because, GWS aren't going to have too many father-sons because their players are probably only just ready to, physically make a child. But, in as time goes by, it'll be more even.
Mm-hmm. What about other, has Brisbane managed to profit from it, from Fitzroy players?
Well, they got Jonathan Brown as a father-son.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if that's Brisbane or Fitzroy.
But they get the Fitzroy players, don't they, Brisbane? Just like Sydney get the South Melbourne players if they want them.
I suppose so. I haven't thought about that.
It doesn't seem to happen very often, but no. I'm sure. Surely they're available. Why don't we look at a little bit more of the process of drafting? Your club's going to sit down today and pick up all these young guys. It seems to be like the traditional wisdom is big guys take quite a bit longer than midfielders and stuff to come on, your talls. But when would you expect to start to see them contribute to your team's success?
Well, you can expect to see them contribute fairly early on.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of really the way some people are talking about it is, this guy's a guy you can build a team around. I think that will take, you know, 5+ years for big guys.
Yeah.
Other than,
and even midfielders,
exceptional circumstances.
Yeah, like you look at what.
Yeah, like say Bryce Gibbs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been 5 years, possibly. This might be his sixth.
It took Job quite a while to get going.
Yeah, yeah. He's probably, I don't know, he was kind of, he started a bit behind, so.
Okay.
That's probably not the best example, but I mean, Bryce Gibbs, number one, everyone was talking about him as being an absolute gun, and pretty early on he showed that he's got, you know, a few of the attributes in terms of kicking and decision-making and that kind of thing, but it doesn't all click for quite a while. Daisy Thomas is another one, you know, until Collingwood had that premiership year. You know, before that, he was seen as kind of a flashy player who was, you know, who could be handy, but wasn't like a, you know, an established kind of senior player who you could rely on to, you know, to do what you needed him to do. So it does take a while. I think people, you know, tend to forget that.
So, yeah, when do you think you can judge the quality of a draft? At what point do you reckon you can actually start to say whether your team whiffed on it?
That's an interesting one. I think, ideally, the longer the time has passed, the better. But I reckon probably 5 years, you're starting to kind of see, how it's shaping up. But there are always kind of late bloomers who, you know, who might surprise you in the year or two after that. Because I guess if you're drafted at 18 and you probably start playing your best footy around, I don't know, 24 to 27, like that's 24, that's 6 years on from when you're drafted. So it's quite a while.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that is the strange thing with the AFL draft. I mean, I can't think of another one where they pick them straight out of high school. Both from a physical and a mental and a skill level, it seems like you've so much more as expected from your players. I mean, it really does make the concept of evaluating talent difficult at that point, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's as much about, you know, whether you're mentally kind of ready and whether you're stable enough to play elite sport as it is about, you know, whether you've got the tools to do it. And that's something where a lot of people, you know, seem to trip up. I kind of feel this is one of the things that people always sort of talk about as big blunders in drafting is picking Richard Tambling ahead of Lance Franklin.
Yep.
And I can kind of sympathise with the Tigers for not taking Franklin, because you look at him and even now, he kind of looks like he doesn't care that much, you know?
Yeah.
And I can see how you might look at him and say he might be everything or he might be nothing. So, I think that's the real challenge.
It's a tough one with Buddy as well, because you can imagine there's clubhouses in the AFL which could handle him and there's some which can't. Like, if your team's in a rebuilding stage like the Tigers are going to be for a while, then perhaps having a character like Franklin's might be too much of a distraction.
Yeah, possibly, rather than going into a club with, you know, a culture which is pretty sound, and, you know, Hawthorn have been the most successful team of the last 30 years or whatever, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it worked out okay for them.
Yeah. So you're, generally in this national draft, you see teams, what, pick up somewhere around 5 to 7 guys in the draft, that's about right?
That's probably a little too much. You wouldn't see too many teams picking 7, I don't think.
Okay, unless so around 5.
Unless they've had a real clean out. 3's the minimum.
3's the minimum.
So, yeah, between probably 3 and 5, I guess.
So your club's an interesting one to look at Essendon, where they're, you know, have come close for a couple of years and they're really looking like they need to start building towards a premiership in the next 5 or so years. That's the aim. Would you agree with that?
I think so. I think before 5 years, I reckon, you know, they'll be wanting to probably hit in about 2.
Okay. So in this draft, or let's say in the last couple of drafts, then in this period where you're building towards a premiership, how many players out of the ones you draft will you be hoping to be sticking around in that premiership side? I mean, what's the kind of strike rate you'd want from a good draft?
Well, it depends so much on where else you get your players from. And if you have, I mean, Ben Howlett's one who came off the rookie list, and getting Brendan Goddard in, you know, it's more than just the national draft. If you can strike out there and make up for it somewhere else, that's okay. It's interesting how, you know, how premiership sides come together. It tends not to be, I guess, like, you know, three or four guys from the one draft kind of hitting their straps at the same time, which is probably what you might imagine.
But you can see, like, guys from every draft. Like, that's what I mean. Like, even if you're not going to get them every time, but would you expect half of the players from the recent drafts to be all there? Like, some of them to be still hanging around and in the starting 22, you know, top 22?
5 years on, is this? Or,
well, yeah, I'm just saying, like, you're, so in the 5 years leading up to your draft, like, this is surely when you'd still want to be building talent towards a team. I'm just trying to figure out what you'd hope for from a good draft. Like,
I think if you got one or two wrong, you could live with that.
Yeah.
If you got three, that's kind of starting to, you know, be a bit iffy.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, you mentioned the Tigers already, but they are the example of a team which had a, you know, an embarrassment of riches when it came to draft picks, and they haven't seemed to be able to convert it into as much success as even, say, Carlton, who managed to at least get something from their draft.
I'm not sure. I mean, Richmond's, Cochin's an absolute great pickup. You know, he's going to be announced captain next week, we think, and he's about 22, 21 or something. So, I mean, they've got some right. We know they've got some wrong as well, but Dustin Martin's another one that, you know, could be anything and kind of looks the goods.
But broadly, I mean, or do you think their failures have come from outside the draft? Because, frankly, they've done something wrong in the last 20 years to have had such consistent lack of success.
Don't get me started on Richmond. I've got a whole... I got a whole thing.
All right, well, let's leave that aside. But just generally, like, you think, you know, a good team, like, obviously Geelong, when you look at their premiership lists, like, there's a whole lot of, you know, draft talent that they've been able to accumulate in the years before that. Like,
yes.
It seems like if you do it right, you can really build a hell of a team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's where most of your players come from. So, That's ideally, that's how you do it. But you do need to use, you know, other methods as well. Even Geelong, you know, they got Brad Ottens through a trade, and probably without him,
yeah, they don't get him.
You know, you don't have much of a ruck division.
Yeah, the fact, I think, like I said, I mean, the obvious big difference is just the culture around the draft. Whereas, you know, when you got guys coming in, you know, in America where they have obviously the big drafts, they're generally essentially brands in their own right by the time they make a professional league because of college. Whereas, you know, in Australia, they're still quite unknown concepts. Do you think that, like, for example, I mean, Jack Watts or something would be the obvious example in recent history of someone who's really suffered from overhype on the back of a draft or whatever. Everyone's, you know, it seems to give him a pretty hard time, whereas you're somebody who defends him. Do you think that he suffers from the fact that people don't really understand these players when they're drafted?
Possibly. I mean, the thing about the draft, and, you know, you'll see it in all the write-ups tomorrow when every club says, oh, we're very pleased to get this player. They only tell you about the, you know, the good points of the player. You never hear, like, he's great at this, but he can't kick, or...
Yeah.
You know, and that's...
But that's not the job of the club. That's the job of the journalist or whatever to go out and, you know, do their pluses and minuses.
Yeah, I get the impression that a lot of people kind of copy each other, you know, in terms of the journalists. I think Emma Quayle's a really good one to... I think she really does her homework. And that, you know, she's kind of made the draft her thing.
Yep.
But...
Generally speaking, it's a pretty tough ask for these guys because it's not like there's, you know... reams of videotape and stuff that they can go through for all these kids all the time, is there?
Yeah, you're right. It's getting better. There's kind of more of it available probably now than there has been, and that'll probably continue. But yeah, I mean, it's not like there's no way that you can watch someone as much as you'd watch, you know, like in an AFL footballer. And even then, you know, you're not completely sure what you're getting all the time. But people ask for this perfect, you know, description of what to expect.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause yeah, this is the thing I was getting at is, you know, when somebody drafts LeBron or, you know, any of these kids who are famous, I mean, even the ones who come down the draft, you know, these are people who people watched for hundreds of hours over the last couple of years, and they really feel like they've gotten to know them. Whereas in the AFL, you draft these kids and, you know, everyone will pretend that they've heard of them this week, but up until recently, they're kind of really, they're black boxes. Like, no one knows what they're going to get. Do you think that's a help or a hindrance to the players? Like, obviously, it means they come up without expectations, but it means that people, by the same token, get to generate their own expectations completely.
I think certainly early draft picks suffer from it. I think the later ones, you know, who you don't hear about until they start playing, you know, they don't seem to have kind of any issue with expectations, which is which has got to be a good thing. I think really it all sort of stems from, you know, you're talking about the fact that generally people don't get to see these players. And even guys like, you know, Jack Viney, who we've known all year that Melbourne would take, like, probably Melbourne supporters wouldn't have seen that much of him. And yeah, the fact is if people haven't seen them, then clubs can just, you know, drum up, you know, so much kind of excitement, you know, based on what may or may not, you know, be kind of reality.
So you actually blame the clubs in this instance? I mean, do you do the same with Jack Watts? Do you blame the Demons?
I think the Demons have kind of admitted that they probably put too much pressure on him, and, you know, they've said that they don't want the same to happen to Hogan, who's, you know, the 17-year-old who will play in 2014 and is, you know, effectively a number one or two draft pick. But yeah, I think while it's great for boosting membership numbers, you know, you can definitely see it take its toll on players, you know, especially kind of early on in their careers.
Yeah. Do you think some of this stems from people not really understanding how difficult it is to do talent evaluation at this point? I mean, I know you think that, you know, first round draft picks can be overrated. Do you think that people don't really get that sometimes?
Like you think
first round draft picks suffer from being overhyped. Do you think people don't understand that just because you're a first-round draft pick, like, compared to other drafts, like, you know, in America, people draft a first-round draft pick and they kind of know what they're getting more than, you know, in a first-round draft pick in the AFL, where they're, you know, clubs are going on a lot less and they're a lot younger. So it means it's a lot harder to get a guaranteed hit in the first round, but maybe the public doesn't understand that as much, is what I'm suggesting.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the fact that they're 17 or 18, I mean, you're still, like, physically growing.
Yeah.
For one thing. And obviously, you know, if I think about what I was like at 17 or 18, like, would I be mature enough to, you know, to be ready for that kind of thing? I don't know. It's kind of crazy to think about. Like, you can forget, you know, how young they are and the fact that they probably don't have much life experience and that there's not really much that can kind of prepare them. And I guess, you know, for some early round, early picks, you know, that added kind of expectation is just one more thing which makes it difficult.
So two more questions and then we'll wrap it up. The first is about drafting Aboriginal players, because that's obviously another thing that's totally idiosyncratic to Australian sport. Obviously, there was a lot of controversy earlier this year at Adelaide, but just generally speaking, do you think there's going to be a continued shift as, you know, there's more teams need more players? Do you think they're going to continue to push to more rural Aboriginal communities and stuff to try and find talent?
Gee, it's a big question. I mean,
yeah, there's about seven parts to that question.
Is Australia going to sort its shit out? And, like,
well, I'm not talking about community. Yeah. You know,
it's kind of, look, ideally you'd like to see more of it. I think the fact that there are now 18 clubs rather than 16 suggests that people have to kind of, you know, look in places where they might not normally to find talent. But yeah, and
that, I mean, you look
that
at
might be one of those places, but there's also this thing of, you know, people are starting to realize, I think, that you need to be, you know, you need to be mentally kind of capable of, you know, dealing with an AFL environment. And a lot of Aboriginal players, you know, kind of haven't been. Like Zeph Skinner was someone who'd come from a very rural, you know, kind of community, and he's retired at the age of 22 last week, and, you know, had so much talent, but just kind of wasn't ready in terms of what was demanded of him. So it's difficult to know which way it'll go.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'd have to believe that surely this guy's not playing in, you know, the NTFL or something like that, they could be tapping into, or at least coming from a, you know, something more structured than playing, you know, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, have you heard about, you know, Liam Jarrah's kind of what he was doing?
Like, yeah.
He was playing, you know, barefoot.
Yeah.
Just in the desert, I think, just the year before he got drafted. So, I don't know. It's,
There's a lot of, a lot of issues tied into the one question there.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I'm going to ask you then, finally, if there's one thing you'd like to see fixed or changed in the, in the AFL draft system as it stands now?
I think the system itself is probably okay. I think the way people understand it is probably the bit that needs work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so do you think that it's also an issue of how the AFL communicates about its draft? Do you think some of that falls upon the league itself?
I'm not sure. I think the AFL, you know, needs to kind of side with the clubs to a fair degree, and, you know, and help in promoting talent and I guess kind of drumming up the hype that goes with it all. And I think that's beneficial to the clubs and it's beneficial to the AFL, but it's long term. You know, it can cause problems with supporters expecting things that, you know, probably aren't reasonable. It can cause problems with players who, you know, don't know kind of what they're in for. I think basically it needs to be either a journalistic kind of shift or just more than that, just a shift in kind of the public knowledge, and people kind of need to wake up and realize what it's actually like and think about how long players kind of take to come on, how few players there are that just have no faults, which is kind of what we're led to believe.
Yeah.
You know, just these things that people, I mean, it's fun to get swept up in the hype, but I don't know, you got to take it with a bit of a grain of salt, because realistically, you know, the AFL and clubs are just kind of doing what's best to, you know, to benefit them rather than, you know, giving supporters the, you know, the absolute truth.
Yeah, I think if you're asking supporters to become more realistic in their expectations, you've probably got a better chance of fixing Aboriginal communities than achieving that end. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed the draft today. I hope Essendon delivers everything that you've dreamt about, because this is basically the last time you get to think about football for the next couple of months, so you need to savor every drop.
Got a couple of little drafts coming up.
This is why you love it.
It'll be okay.
Yeah, they just get this stave out your addiction until March, when you can, you know, get stuck back in again. But yeah, no, seriously, thanks for coming on and giving us your thoughts, Sam.
No worries, thank you.
I will be back early next week with potentially a very exciting guest to talk about the future of rugby union in Victoria. Until then, I'm Eric George. Thanks for listening.